My name's Peter Tindall. I'm currently the Ombudsman and Information Commissioner in Ireland. And I was at first social worker and then coordinator with CUS when it first professionalised. When I joined CUS, would have been early 80s, I'd say, late 70s, early 80s, group home was established. The five residents had moved from the hospital into the student house in Rhythm Gardens. And at the time, there was some transition in place from having student volunteers to gradually seeing more community service volunteers come in at that point. The original founding volunteers had moved on by then, so the people who were there were subsequent to those. At that time, CUS had two other projects still working. One of them was the original Ely Hospital project, where students took a group of people from the hospital out into the community on Wednesday afternoons for social activities. And also by then, the short stay house at Hamilton Street had been set up. Both the group home had a full-time organizer, which was the job I originally took on. It was called a social worker. And then the short stay house also had a full-time member of staff. And there was one administrative staff member at that time. Still based in the Students' Union, had an office in the Students' Union next to Student Community Action, SCA, at the time. Everybody's name has changed since, of course. During the time I was there, the All Wales Mental Handicap Strategy, as it was called, was developed. And at that stage, it was clear to all of us that a long-term solution, living with students in a student house, would stop being age-appropriate for the residents. The ethos at the time, particularly on the committee, which was very active, would have been driven by what at the time was known as normalisation, subsequently social role valorisation, and so on. And the general view was that people should be able to lead lives as valued members of their communities and that they needed support in order to do that. The inconsistency of support that the regular changeover of volunteers caused was seen in the long run as not being desirable or beneficial. People needed a more stable and secure support network, and consequently, with the mental handicap strategy funding, as it were, we were able to get full-time staff to support the residents in the group home and to run the short stay house at Hamilton Street and to develop a community employment project or a social education project, as it was, which subsequently developed into the mainstream work of the Innovate Trust, so that there was continuity there. CUS took a decision that it didn't want to be a large-scale provider at that time. It took the view that it preferred to have, if you like, an influencing role, and that it would run its own projects, but that it wasn't going to turn into, for instance, the provider of accommodation for people at Ely Hospital. You'll have in the history the story about the inquiry by Geoffrey Howe into Ely Hospital, how that led to the scandal at Ely Hospital, which in turn caused students within the university who were engaged with some of the residents at the hospital to try and do more more direct to actually improve the lives of the people there and to demonstrate that they didn't need to be hospitalised. So at that point, it was CUS was highly active in, I should say as well, that when CUS reorganised with the professional staffing, it was decided to move to having a single person running the organisation, reporting to the board, And I took on that job at the time as coordinator. Things like directors and chief executives would have been regarded as probably too establishment for CUS at the time. And so we did a lot of work promoting the development of community-based services in Wales and in developing two of the major charities that provided support and accommodation. They changed names and so on over time, but Opportunity Housing Trust was the one founded largely at the behest of CUS to support people in the Cardiff and South Glamorgan, as it would have been, area at the time. And Catrefi Cymru kind of jointly with Mencap to cover the rest of Wales. So people from CUS were really involved in all of the programmes that developed for hospital closure, for developing the charitable infrastructure that underpinned the community-based services. Also for some of the standard settings. So, for instance, I worked on the original standards for community living that were issued as part of the mental handicap strategy. I was one of the co-authors of that with Peter Cahill from, then he would have been Gwalia Housing, but he went on to be Cardiff Community, Chief Executive for Cardiff Community Housing Association. So CUS was very actively involved in developing mainstream services for people with intellectual disabilities, but it wasn't itself committed to being a major service provider. So that probably is an overview of my time at CUS. Now, the individual residents at that time, we would have done things like looked at their level of social activity and so on. They actually had very disproportionately high levels of social activity between volunteers, and the house was quite well supported, and they led quite rich lives. Initially, they still attended a day centre, Tralee Day Centre, though over time we kind of started to develop community-based alternative day activities for people. And sadly, over time, as well as people got older, their, you know, in particularly one case, their disability became, their physical disability became more pronounced, and then, as you well know, subsequently they were able to move on to more self-contained accommodation rather than living permanently as a group. During my time there, one of the residents returned home to her family in Swansea. Well, Adrian Roper, the head of Catrefi, worked briefly at CUS, having been a volunteer student in the house as well. Catrefi Cymru, the board, it was Rex Hewitt and Mencap Cymru at the time, and myself, who worked on developing Catrefi Cymru from scratch. It was obvious that there needed to be a new Wales-wide body, because Opportunity Housing Trust was specifically dealing with Cardiff. Opportunity Housing Trust originally was called Interval Housing Trust, though that name was lost fairly quickly. But when the decision was taken by the board at CUS that it wanted to stay small and agile, so could be, in a sense, trying to drive progress rather than engaging with the authorities as a service provider, which would have entailed a different kind of relationship, then we did the work on putting a board together which had representatives of families, which had people from social services and so on. It is worth saying the way the mental handicap strategy worked, there was a county at that stage. Social services were provided by the 8 counties in Wales, so it would have been South Glamorgan, covering what's now Cardiff and the Vale of Glamorgan. There was a planning group set up to cover that area. I was very actively involved with it. I also, at the time, chaired South Glamorgan Interval, which is the Council of Voluntary Service for the county. So I was well placed, CUS was quite well placed through being involved in these various networks, and to start to put a new organisation together. So the things like developing the constitution, you know, the company status for it, all the rest of those things, charitable status, would have been done from the CUS offices at the time. So, and the late Gary Bai, who died last year, very sadly, but this year, earlier this year, was the administrator at CUS at the time, and he did a lot of the work in the practical groundwork in creating the legal structure and financial basis and employment and so on for those organizations. So yeah, CUS was, CUS didn't just run its own projects and then develop into it. It actually was the driver of an awful lot of changes that happened in intellectual disability in Wales in the 80s. Yeah, I was at CUS for best part of 7 years, and because it was developing and because intellectual disability services were developing, that was a very good time to be there. There was optimism, there was money, there was a lot of principle, you know, people, and within government, there were, within the civil service, there were people who were very to drive things forward, and within local government, so to be around. After that, I became the First Needs Housing Officer, as it was then called, with Tai Cymru, the body that funded and regulated Housing Association Wales. So we developed a policy there for shared housing, you know, put the group home model was established at the time as the way to go. I think nowadays you'd be looking to more individual, person-centered, rights-based approaches, but you have to, within the context of its time, Wales was very radical. And so we put funding in place for the requirement maximum of 4 people had to be fully integrated, and so on, so that the planning had to account the individuals. And there was a big rollout of housing activity while I was at Tai Cymru for people with intellectual disabilities, as well as for people from other groups who needed support. We put in place a revenue grant scheme as well, which helped, you know, organizations like Cartrevi and Opportunity Housing Trust as they were being established. And I would have, in that context, worked across Wales with the individual authorities and health board development of alternative community-based provision. In retrospect, it all went quite well and speedy. At the time, it was quite frustratingly slow and took a lot of negotiation. There were a lot of people who'd been brought up in the old services and who had a very patronizing view of people with intellectual disabilities, persuading them community-based service could and would work, and not only persuading them of that, but making them a part of delivering it was quite a challenge, and quite a challenge too with some parents. There were some very, very articulate advocates, family advocates for change. So I was, you know, they were helped to bring other families along. After I was at Tai Cymru, I went and worked with council, assistant director of housing there, had responsibility for homelessness services, for services for older people, for the housing waiting list, and a whole variety of other things. My job kept growing. I kept acquiring new responsibilities. Went from there to the Welsh Local Government Association, where I was head of education and culture, and then to the Arts Council of Wales, where I was chief executive, before becoming the public service ombudsman in Wales. I did that for the best part of 7 years also. One particular case with a gentleman called Paul Ridd, who died unnecessarily in hospital, a gentleman from Port Talbot with intellectual disabilities. The office, myself as ombudsman, did a very critical report on the care he had because of his intellectual disability. People didn't understand how ill he was, and he didn't receive the treatment that would have saved his life. And since then, the Paul Ridd Foundation has been set up, which I'm, you know, very pleased about. His family have been great campaigners, and intellectual disability liaison nurses were put in place in all of the general hospitals in Wales, so that those kind of communications difficulties shouldn't have arisen again. Of course, unless you're vigilant, you fix something once, but Whether it stays fixed is another matter. My current job, I'm Ombudsman and Information Commissioner in Ireland. I'm from Ireland originally, as you can tell. I went to work in Wales. I went to Cardiff originally en route to London, stopped off to visit somebody, and then worked there for more than 30 years. So I've got a strong links with Wales, and my daughters continue to live in Wales to this day. So I do keep an eye on how things are going there, and I think it's one of the challenges that that's faced is that clearly at the time that I was engaged in services, we were switching from an institutional model to a model to a community-based model, and subsequently that change, we've seen the change through to a much more person-centered model of supporting people. My worry is now that the purchasing approach has commercialized that to some extent, and that the kind of quality of life and the being for people with intellectual disabilities being able to live not just within their communities, but as engaged, valued members of those communities is not something that we can take for granted. And I hope that people working in services in Wales, and I'm sure that they are, and the successors of CUS continue to campaign to make sure of us, but that the services that are delivered give people the opportunities in life that they deserve. I would have been in and out of the house, they would have been in and out of the office. We'd go out for meals together, to the beach, whatever, you know. It was, they, as I say, had a very active life. And even though I was paid rather than the volunteers, I was still very engaged with them and enjoyed their company. Alan was very cross with me because during our time there, in recent years before his death, I had done a video, and of course at the time the terminology was mental handicap. And so when the video was reused, Alan would always say, "And why do you call me handicapped in the video?" Thinking, yeah. Very difficult to explain. Alan actually interviewed me for the job as part of the interview panel. When I first got the job, Alan sat in on the interview. So even in those days, That would have been, I think, absolutely unprecedented in the UK at the time, to have a person with intellectual disability actually engaged in a recruitment process. So